What happened to your hair?
Last night.
Yeah. Last night happened to your hair?
Well, I mean, other than the fact that I haven't cut it in a long time because I pretty much, I look like
it looks
cool
like it's been
greaser.
Ground into the carpet.
I feel like I've been grounded to the carpet.
Yeah?
Yeah, Bill Davis, who we've discussed on the
Americana air, Bill Davis?
Americana Bill Davis, who we've discussed him
the
before.
The beer thrower. We just call him
the
Americana
beer thrower.
Bill.
Yeah.
I think we should.
Yes, the beer
That's
thrower.
Currency and, I would like to exchange, by the way.
And you're the bleeder.
I'm the bleeder.
Yeah, because, and I ask him.
Because he's the beer thrower.
Well, I ask him finally, like, he's called you the bleeder, like, for years, and finally, like, fucking 12 years into it, I was like, why the hell do you call Ryan the bleeder? And he's like, because I threw a beer into his face, and it made him.
Yeah, he threw
his
a
nose
beer
bleed.
In my face, and hit me in the, like, lip, and it bled.
That's
right,
not
but
good.
But leave it to Bill Davis to somehow make it sound like it's your fault.
Yeah, he's maintained that this entire time, and that is untrue.
For
yeah,
having like a face.
Your face got in the way.
Yeah.
Well, it was Bill's birthday last night, and we there were a number of his friends that are musicians, and we played a show at the bar that he works, and there was an unlimited bar tab, and at some point, the sun came up. we have a guest again.
Hey, that's right.
We have a repeat guest tonight.
Mr.
Hello,
Swiatek.
Guest.
A Chad Swiatek, he of writing fame, and he's been, this is your now repeat offender on the podcast, so Chad, welcome.
Hey, y'all.
Word. and in fact, maybe something we ought to talk about with the next segment, but I do think it'd be interesting just for you to give us a, on the other side, mm-hmm. give us a 30 seconds on where you came from before you were here tonight, because I think it's kind of interesting.
All right. Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Gladly.
Okay, but
why don't we play some music?
Yeah, let's do some music. So I'm Shane.
Ryan. I'm Kevin.
The aforementioned Chad.
And Mark.
Somebody likes it.
There have been a lot of conversations bandied about here in Austin specific to the music scene. And, Chad, you were just on a panel before you came over here. Am I right?
Like, that's correct.
Okay. And then, can you share just a quick synopsis of like sort of what that was all about? And
gladly. Yeah. A little background. I write for the Austin Business Journal. That's my day gig. And so I cover creative industries, which involves music. And so I write about, how much various bars are making and how much festivals are making and all that good stuff. And so the session that I was a part of tonight was put on by the Austin Forum, it's called. It's a tech-centric group. And they were looking at how Austin's tech scene, which is, you know, going gangbusters, can help its music scene, which by all indications is struggling in terms of staying financially viable. You have clubs that are about shut down.
Because rents are out of control.
Yeah, rents are out of control.
Big interests are moving in.
They say like 50% of Austin musicians qualify for Section 8 housing.
Oh, without a doubt.
One third of Austin musicians
earn
$15,000 or
well,
less.
As a working musician, I've got to tell you, like one of the interesting things that I recently was considering is that for the most part, the club cover today is exactly the same as it was in 1992.
That was discussed, yeah. It hasn't changed in 20-plus years.
You can't. I mean, there's no way you can live on that.
And, I mean, and even that, people are reticent and reluctant to pay.
Well,
you know, they'd rather go to a free show.
So I would argue, and I would certainly, I'm guessing that this probably came up, like, if you keep the covers the same, but the prices of the drinks rise with the economy over time,
sure.
That goes a lot of that goes to the bar and doesn't get necessarily shared with the talent, and so that's
the only time you ever really see any bar sales, a percentage of bar sales get shared with the talent is when there's no cover.
We did that for a while. When I was booking a club, we experimented with a bunch of different things. Of course, we tried doing cover first, but then we did a deal where like the
right.
bands get a percentage of the bar. We would get more people out.
Yeah, you can get more people out, and you actually end up making right around the same amount of money depending on how many people you get there. But you hit the nail on the head, Chad, and that is something I've been thinking about also recently is that, yeah, nobody wants to pay for music in any form. People will go out to see a movie and have no problem with, you know, dropping $10. But if a lot of times people will ask, hey, I'm playing a show. Would you like to come out? Oh, is there a cover?
Yeah, I mean, it's gross. I mean, there's no other word for it. It's gross. And so at the event tonight, we were talking about, I kind of threw it out there. I just said, you know, everyone says, well, the next Spotify should be in Austin. The next Napster should be in Austin. And I think, no, you should just try to find little problems that you can solve for people. Like, you know, there was a lot of talk
achievable
about
achievable stuff.
A virtual chip tip jar. You know, something that is maybe
that's
takes
a great
maybe
idea.
Takes the architecture of Tabbed Out or something and
sure.
turns it into a way for the audience to say, hey, you know what? This I didn't pay for a cover, but I'm going to throw $10 at this band just because they blew my mind. I mean,
a lot of the reason why people will play for free or pay for the play for the $5 cover is because there are so many people waiting in the fucking line to that are good, that are genuinely talented.
At any given time, there's probably 250 really good bands in Austin.
Right.
And
so you can't demand better wages.
Suck, but, like, yeah, but, you know, three or four of them might be playing at various clubs on the same night, and, you know, it's just going to dilute the pool.
250 is a lot of good bands.
I know.
But, yeah. Like,
there's a lot of good bands.
Yeah, that's probably not overstating it too much.
Anyway, I don't want to. We can totally go down the rabbit hole here.
Right.
But, yeah. It's true. Yeah. You know,
should,
I was going to say
should we talk about the matter at hand.
Yes, that's true.
Which
Ryan,
I picked.
You did pick. Well, so, you kind of picked
a band. That
well, I kind of picked, and it was kind of picked by what was his name, Nicholas. One of our listeners actually submitted, and we've been talking about doing this for a while, but submitted an idea for us to cover a record that he likes.
This is our first listener submitted. Can you pop a cork later in production, Mark?
Yeah.
No,
drop,
not right
drop
now
that,
with your
drop
mouth.
Drop that post, please. But they're the Stone Roses' humbly titled second record, Second Coming, which is why we invited Chad, because
I have some thoughts and experiences with this band.
Well, and am I making this up? Is this the band that you went to London to see?
Manchester.
Oh,
yeah.
Well,
come on, get
Manchester.
It right.
Did they play the Factory?
The Factory's been closed for
the
a while.
Hacienda? I know, but that would have been amazing.
I saw the Factory.
Yeah, did you?
I saw what used to be the Factory. Yeah.
Does that building still stand?
It does. It's not. It's. I forget what it is specifically now, but
yeah,
it's very much not.
It's not a factory.
No, it's very much not a music venue.
Well, yeah, but
Mark, you're on fire tonight.
So
it happens.
Yeah, I'm into this band a little bit.
Yeah. So yeah, Chad traveled overseas to see these guys when they reunited after many, many moons, and
which is no small feat because Chad is walking challenged.
Yes, I'm in a wheelchair and did it solo. We can get into that. I can give you the whole spiel later. But
ultimately, it was important.
How was the show?
It was important for you to get there.
Yeah, I think I had made. This is a band that I got. It's weird because I got into this band backward. This Second Coming was the album of theirs that I heard first. Whereas their debut is the one that gets put on all the best records list. But I was a huge fan of theirs, and in college, right around the time that they broke up, I said, well, if they ever get back together, I don't care where, I'm going to go see them. And, well, you know, 15 years later, I had to own up to it, and I did.
How was the show?
Solid B.
At least you're honest, man.
But I
traveled 4,000 miles
how could
for a solid
it live
B.
Up to your expectations.
You know, it's funny because
that's actually better than I thought you were going to say.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, let's be honest. Ian Brown is not a gifted singer.
He never was a gifted singer.
No.
We'll talk about that at length.
Exactly. you know, it's one of those things where it's about the journey. It's not about where, you know, the end. Hey, it was a good show. I'm glad that I was there.
And able to mark it off your bucket list.
I enjoyed every moment. And I got to see them end the night with I Am the Resurrection, which is
the best Stone Roses song.
Yes. So
hands down.
You know, if the rest of the show had been a flaming turd and I just had that.
I actually just got chills when you said that.
Think about it, right?
The flaming turd?
Yeah.
No, but not the flaming turd. God damn, you fucking guys. I want the three of us to briefly discuss our opinions. By the three of us, I mean me, Ryan, and Kevin, you know.
About this record?
About this record, yeah.
I think it's an okay classic rock album, and it has its moments that are good, and it's, you know what they're not good at? Brevity.
No.
What, the album starts with a 12-minute long...
Well, that is something that struck me. Like, it's for this sort of Madchester honorific band, that they're a little jammy. Like, it's a...
Jammy.
There are moments where...
Jamish.
They're Brit jammish. There are moments where... And it's weird, because I was listening to Sound Opinions and alternately to this record kind of at the same time, and they decided to talk about the Grateful Dead.
Oh, I heard that.
Yeah, and I was like, you know, that's kind of lining up.
I was thinking the same
first
thing.
Half of this record.
I had to go through. So let me just back up for a second. The first Stone Roses record, I distinctly remember the first time I ever heard the song "I Want to Be Adored." I grew up in a small Texas town, and didn't have occasion to hear at that time like stuff that sounded like that. And it was a game changer for me. And that first...
That's a terrific song.
Yeah, it's an amazing song. Most of that record is amazing. Those songs are solid and hooky as fuck. Having said that, I actively hate this album. It's in the top five worst albums I think I've listened to on this show. And no offense... there's no songs. It sounds great. Like, they have an amazing rhythm section, but it's all the amazing rhythm section.
I think Love Spreads is...
Love Spreads is a great song.
Fantastic song.
I think so, too.
That song is amazing. But sure. But take that out of it, and there's... It's hard for me to even talk about it, because I love that first album so much.
I like that last song, too. Was it The Boss?
If you unpack the process of like sort of like the tales, like the historical tales about how this record came together, there is so much talk about difficulty and people not getting along and interchanging band members and styles that are moving in different directions.
Right. I mean, apparently the word on the street was they tried stylistically so many different things for this. And one of the things that's amazing to me and that like I had never, for some reason, it slipped off the radar. Again, don't get me wrong. It sounds amazing. The only thing that doesn't sound good on this album is Ian Brown's voice. But it sounds...
Can't deny that.
It sounds great. I hate myself for feeling this way. And I want to say this, and this is true. I listen to this album more than any other album we've ever done on the show. I listened to it 6 times because I was thinking at some point I'm going to get it.
Yeah.
And I listened to it the last time today... I got kicked off halfway through because somebody that's in the room was utilizing my Spotify account. And
if it took 6 times for you to figure it out,
yeah,
then, like, that's all you need.
I kept hoping, you know. I have such great affection. But, you know, since we were talking, why don't we listen to one of the songs and come back?
Sure.
What, you want to listen to Love Spreads? Since I think we're all in agreement that that's
Yeah, let's get into Love Spreads.
It's definitely the penultimate single off this record.
Ultimate.
Penultimate means second best.
Also,
yeah, you know
the
that.
Ultimate, and then the third ultimate as well.
Okay, I'm behind you on that.
Yeah.
I love that song, and a lot of what I love about that song is how playful it is. Like, it's really coy in this interesting, swaggering way. Like,
well, no, they sound like they were having a great time.
Well, no, I'm talking about, like, lyrically and what he's saying. But I mean, we all agree that's the song on the record. But, Chad, during the break, we were talking, and you were saying you have some stuff to say after. And I feel so bad about...
Look, don't apologize. Like, again, I came into this band backwards, so this is the record that I, and this song.
Right.
And so I had, like, and then, you know, it took me a while to warm up to the debut record, which seems stupid, right?
Well, because the debut record,
it's recorded poorly.
Poorly, right. This record sounds so good.
It wasn't that. It was just that stylistically the two are so different.
That's true.
And that was the thing. Like, I'd heard this, I got this record from, it was one of my freebie selections from BMG because I heard this song on like the modern rock radio station in my hometown.
I got the Stone Roses first record as a 12 for a penny from Columbia House.
And so, and I mean, you know,
I bought mine at a pawn shop.
Right.
High five, Ryan.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, is it the high, it's the high point of the record, absolutely, in terms of just having like a single that hits on all cylinders. There are a lot of things on this elsewhere on this record that I like a lot. So, I can't put Head and Shoulders above everything, but I think it wins the race.
I'm gonna break with tradition and have you pick the rest of the selections. What are we doing? Two or three more songs?
We'll do two more. Yeah, but Kevin's got something he wants to say.
We'll get there in a minute. But I did want to share a little snippet from the Enemy review of this particular record.
Not Enemy, but New Musical Express.
Your own personal enemy?
Yes. Yeah. Well, they might be the enemy of the Stone Roses. this record was
polarizing.
It was polarizing. And I did think that, and ultimately, this review has some nice things to say about this album, but I think the analogy that they draw is a distinctly British one, and it's also very funny.
Does it say bollocks in it?
It does not say bollocks. It says, and forgive me, I'll have to read for just a second, but I'll try to be quick about it. So it says, there are very few albums whose questionable reputation can be summed up by a zombie movie, but that's just one of the Stone Roses' Second Coming's dubious distinctions. Faced with two flesh eaters in their North London garden at the start of Shaun of the Dead, Nick Frost and Simon Pegg turned to the latter's record collection for difference.
Yes.
Using 12 pages of
insufficient. I marked out like hell during this movie, during this moment. I got to say, go ahead.
Yeah, so basically what happens, they take 12 inches of insufficient musical quality as deadly-ish frisbees while saving the better records for a future listen. That is until Second Coming makes its cameo, triggering a short debate between the pair. Despite the apparently life-threatening situation, Frost is all for hurling the record into the walking corpse, while Peg tries to save it with a defensive, I like it, and that's the Stone Roses' second album all over, even with the prospect of being horribly eaten alive, admitting to liking Second Coming is still a bit embarrassing.
That really sums it up pretty well.
I feel like it's got its moments.
Yeah, I mean, okay, 10-story love
it's
song.
It's a little over busy, for sure.
All right, 10-story love song, I think, is a pretty phenomenal
pop love song. But that one sounds different than a lot of the record. I mean,
the whole record sounds different. I mean, Begging You is a techno track.
Begging You is again, like you're saying, like the ones that I was like, these are, but again, but a lot of it, I mean, it sounds so good. The record sounds right.
It's very well produced.
Going back into stuff, I like, I think Tightrope, I just like the lyrics in that song. And then in that song, Tears, there's a moment that is kind of one of my favorite. There's a little, like, 10-15 second passage of Squire's guitar solo that is one of my favorite guitar moments of all time. Like,
John Squire is an incredible
guitar. He knows his way around.
I mean, and, you know, you were saying earlier, you were comparing them to Soul Hat, who I don't know, but...
Well, I mean, I wasn't. Mark was, but he was right.
Was
whoever was. But, I mean, it's well acknowledged in all the...
Jam.
Kind of after, you know, after the fact, you know, where the bones are buried coverage of this record, that John Squire was going through a big, big, big Led Zeppelin and reggae phase. I mean, that is what was going on with him, and he is the dominant songwriter.
And it shows up.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, that's what this record is. It's John Squire doing Houses of the Holy.
So, Chad, you had homage. What'd you say?
His homage.
His homage.
Yeah.
Good job.
If that's your biggest sin, go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, without a doubt. I love this band. Again, I feel I'm going to apologize the whole rest of this because I feel so
strongly. You're like a battered wife who's like trying to make excuses
for
her husband.
I hate this record so much.
He didn't mean to run over me with the car. Yeah.
But I don't want to. I don't want to hate it. I want to love it. They were such an important
That's a Bill Hicks
band
joke,
to me when I was in high school.
I think we should listen to a little bit more of it. I'm going to let Chad pick the next one.
Sure.
What is your second favorite song on this record, Chad? As the resident defender,
let me go with Tightrope.
Tightrope. All right, let's get into Tightrope.
So there's that line in that one. Are we etched in stone or just scratched in the sand, waiting for the waves to come and reclaim the land? Let me tell you, junior year of high school, Chad thought that shit was
mind-blowing.
Oh my God.
Without a doubt, that's the kind of shit that junior year of high school Shane would have like put in people's yearbooks.
Totally.
Okay, going back to this song. It's got a little bit of a that sort of shambling, give peace a chance, John Lennon thing going on.
I kind of knew you were going that way. You're right.
Well, and it does. It's also a little overly busy, like the rest of the record.
It's also not much of a song.
At the end of the day.
Well, I mean, listen. just to be
Debbie Downer.
You know, no, I'm just going to be the adult in the room for a second, which is weird to say because, you know, who
you
I am.
Be the first.
the person that I am. But if you go back and listen to that first Stone Roses record, it's just melody after melody after song after song.
Yeah, but it sounds shitty.
It sounds like shit. That's a thing.
I finally got it. You know, like I had heard about that record for years, and then I finally got it, and I was so disappointed because it sounds it's recorded poorly.
It does, but the remastered version sounds a lot better. But I mean, I am the resurrection. We talked about this in the at the top of the show. I mean, I am the resurrection. Like that build up, and you get that kind of like kind of funky thing, jammy thing. It's really long that they do here, but it keeps your attention. You never know, and then it has that payoff, like Sugar Spun Sister or Elephant Stone or I Want to Be. And these are amazing songs.
The mythology of that record is that you it was made for ecstasy listening.
Well,
it's from Manchester during that era.
Shocking,
yeah. Weird,
shocking, right? There are.
You're going to tell me Happy Mondays did that too.
That explains the best dancing.
But honestly, part of the attraction of this band for me was that they broke up not long after I got into them, and broke up badly.
Yeah,
like you had the drummer, who is by all in every measure the most talented member of the band.
Rennie. He's an amazing drummer. The rhythm section is incredible.
So you had Rennie leave, then you had John Squire break his collarbone in a motorcycle accident. And then it just kind of petered to a halt, and they were gone. The reunion happened in 2012. I bought the tickets in 2011, had them for a good 6 months. There was always this, well, you know, they'll probably play Coachella in 2013. I was like, I could just wait and go see them in California, which would not require, you know, a transatlantic flight and expensive hotels and yada, yada, yada. But it was just a matter of, nah, we got to see that first show back.
Knock it out.
Yeah.
Did they look like they cared?
Absolutely.
Okay.
But, and then, as it turns out, they wound up co-headlining the first night of Coachella along with Blur in 2013. And by all accounts, it was a goddamn disaster. When they came on, they had 5,000 people in front of them. By the time they were done, they had like 1,000.
Really?
So I mean, think about what a fucking buzzkill like that. Like for me, for my favorite band, like compare seeing them with 75,000 people in their hometown,
adoring them at the peak,
or my first experience is just this wet fart. I mean,
was that second time or the first time?
Well, he didn't actually go to that one.
I didn't go to that
one.
That's when he was thinking, I could go to that one instead of this.
But all the reports were that it was just...
abysmal.
A disaster in every possible way. So it's like, all right, I flipped the coin right, you know?
Yeah, well, absolutely.
And can I tell you about the bullet that I dodged on that trip? You know, I got the tickets from a UK broker, and roughly a week before the show, I get a call, like, because I'd given them my U.S. address to send these tickets to, and they didn't send them out until a week before, and they're like, yeah, we can't ship to the United States. And I know, so I had to get the tickets sent to an ex-girlfriend who lived in Oxford, which is not near Manchester or London where I was flying into, but her husband worked in London. So he took the tickets. I met him. He handed me off the tickets. Took the train to Manchester. Get to downtown Manchester to grab a bus to the park, and the line is around the goddamn block, and the buses aren't coming. And the guy's like, "Sorry, mate, the buses ain't running. You're not getting to the show." About a half hour later, like literally 10 buses showed up, and we just poured on. We missed all the opening bands. I get there for like the last half
about
of
that.
You weren't there for the opening bands.
But I get there for like the last half of Primal Scream. We're great. And then, you know, get there. But it was just like, holy shit, I flew across the ocean to potentially miss my dream because of a goddamn bus system that can't get its shit together. Yeah. I was just like, I was cursing whatever was in the sky that I could curse at that moment.
It sounds like you said you dodged a bullet, like, from where I'm sitting, like, I'm, like, counting it up on my fingers, like, it sounds like you dodged at least 5 fucking bullets.
You know, you're right.
And it worked out.
Yeah.
No, you went on an epic journey, and it culminated in a good thing.
So, we're going to go ahead and
Ian Brown is still a shitty singer.
I would imagine, like, you see that a lot more live, where you can't hide anything, you know, the studio stuff.
Nope.
Quick intermission? All right. Let's go do a few minutes with. A couple of things I want to say about this video real quick before we watch it. The song is Heavy Feet by Local Natives, which is an indie band out of L.A. And for the last probably like 5 or 6 years... I just, for some reason, got it in my head that I just don't like this band. But I will say this, that over the course of the last 12 months, I continually hear songs and I'm always like, who is this band? Who is this band? And almost without exception, it's Local Natives. So I guess my initial judgment was wrong about this band. But... this video, and by the way, you guys, you're welcome. It's hilarious. It's incredibly surreal. And ultimately, it's heartbreaking. And I guarantee you guys are all going to go away. And the song is incredible. You're all going to go away from this like when it ends, you're all going to want to go on your own time and watch it again. But anyway, so
break off into individual discussion groups.
No, no. It's,
is it weird that I already want to watch it a second time and I've never seen it before?
It's not weird, but once you see it, like, you think you're funny now. We'll come back.
Hey, man. Hey, man.
No, that's weird.
You are funny. You are. I will tell you that. I haven't been just, you know, just...
Lying.
I haven't been lying.
He's coming back. Tell him he's funny.
All right, so we're going to watch Heavy Feet by Local Natives, and we'll be back in a minute and talk about it.
Fireworks at the water. You were holy. Styrofoam cup. Held between your teeth. Telling me how you're going to outlive your body. Well, you said I wrote it down. It won't say.
Did I lie?
My only comment is, okay.
You're going to watch it again.
Yeah, there's a lot to process there.
But it doesn't hurt that the song is fucking great.
It's a good song.
It's a very good song.
It's a very good song, sure. With a singing sandwich. And
well, and that's the thing about the video. I'll talk about this. Chad, you were talking, like, when we were off mic, you had some distinct things you want to say about the band.
Well, first, I think that video does the song a lot of favors. But I mean that as a backhanded compliment because.
Oh yeah, of course.
You don't think the song is
to me there's not much there with the song, and I'm gonna qualify that by saying, Local Natives, Fleet Foxes, Grizzly Bear, all those kind of very vocal first indie kind of folk bands of the early 2010s.
Similar ilk.
Yeah, very similar ilk, and I've never cottoned to any of them. I mean, you know, call me a dunderhead if you want, but I think that they're all in a way doing a lesser thing of what Band of Horses does much better.
You and I are going to go off the rails about that. I actually can't stand Band of
Horses. Well, that's
your tongue, man.
But you know what? I say I can't stand them, but I actually like them quite a bit. I just think the other bands that you named are better bands.
See, this is just apples and oranges, you know, you and
sure,
I.
Sure, absolutely. Well, that's not a bad
the
thing.
The bands that he named, I tend to find one or two songs great, and the rest of them...
Well, that's what I was thinking about.
Pedestrian.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't love that. I love Fleet Foxes, but I don't love Local Natives. I think that, this song just really hit me, but mostly it's because of the video.
So the video, we should explain for those people that don't go out and watch it.
Yeah, blind people flying model airplanes.
I love this
sounds a little
concept.
Counterintuitive.
Yeah, they're the visually impaired carriers.
And talking sandwiches.
I don't know what it is that is... is it the staring into the sun? Like, why are the guys...
I don't know, and that's the thing. Like, it's so... That's why I said you're going to want to watch this again.
Well,
so
a boom mic shows up in the middle of it. I'm like, well, why is there a boom mic?
The boom
training.
Mic
they're deaf.
They're training.
No, they're not
deaf.
They're blind.
They're blind, not deaf. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I don't...
That would be frustrating.
Yeah. Yes, that would be frustrating. Sorry. I was confusing
and
my...
And pointless.
And pointless. You're correct.
But that was it. That was the thing. And they're like, there are a couple of old guys, and then one of them is younger, and so
slightly younger.
But yeah, I don't know. I thought the story behind that video was kind of interesting.
Well,
I love the story behind the video, and I really wish this was a real documentary about a bunch of veterans in the UK that are now flying.
It's there's so much planes. Like I couldn't figure it out. Like at first
blind.
I was laughing my balls off. So it's like these guys that are blind that have a club. They're like the visually impaired Harriers. And they fly planes, and And then there were singing sandwiches, and it's hilarious. And then the guy like digs a hole. Then they're training. They have olfactory training so they could smell the planes, I guess. At one point, one of the guys smells the paint and he goes, "Smells like yellow." And they're painting the planes. And then he buries a cheesecake in the yard, and they find it, and all this stuff goes on. And then at the end of it, it's heartbreaking, right?
Is finding the cheesecake buried in the yard rewarding in any way? Like,
I can't imagine. They eat the cheesecake, don't they?
It's olfactory training, of course.
I mean, is it? Okay.
So at the end of the video, a couple of the planes collide, and they crash, and people are, you know, it's still funny, but it's also heartbreaking that these old men that are blind that are flying planes, and then their coach like kicks all the sandwiches.
I will say this: I think the flip side of heartbreaking is okay. So if you're an old guy, and if you just buy into the story, right, the story of the video. If you're an old guy and you're sightless, and there is this thing where you can, and you used to be an air traffic controller or whatever, like you could in theory just fly your plane up into the nothingness and enjoy in your the mind's eye where it might go.
I mean, I have no idea what you just said, but
listen back when the show comes out.
I will. But I think I get the general gist of where you're going.
Just back it up.
There were a lot of words involved there, but I think I know. I hate it when that happens. Yeah. I think I know what your gist is. My point about the video, which makes it incredibly insane, well, it's just an insane video. Like, you don't know how to feel. You know, it's so funny. Yes, I know. Not you. I'm thinking about me. I didn't say I know. For you, but I mean, you like there's this hilarity, insanity, and then there's talking sandwiches, and
it's very Dada in parts.
They're smelling paint, yeah. But then at the end of it, like they fail at their task, and they're old men, and it's sad.
I don't know. I think maybe the point could be to crash the planes at the end. They're painted like shit. Like those guys can't see.
I just think they let their schizophrenic friend direct the video.
Point of fact.
What are you going to do? Uh-oh, here we go.
Carrier, a person who engages in persistent attacks on others or incursions into their land. And with that, I've added as much value as I'm ever going to.
So, again, like, it's the craziest fucking video I've seen in a long time. And you guys, you both, and the song is good. You both know you're going to watch this again.
Oh, sure.
Fucking ain't right.
Nah. All
right, let's go talk about something else.
I said both.
One of the interesting things about digging for source material on this record, just reading some of the things that people have written about it, was that it tends to be mostly Brit stuff. At least that's what is.
Well, they were always a bigger deal in the UK than they ever
very
were.
Much.
They were, and to that end, like a lot of the sort of the British write, like the British journalism writing style, and maybe these are just the like. So some of these magazines I don't know as well as I know the ones in the US, and so could be that this is very endemic of their MO. But Clash magazine,
like the band.
Yeah, Clash Magazine.
Spelled the same way, I'm sure.
Yeah, and it is, actually. Yes. Tends to take a long and winding discussion view of these guys, and so...
Lay it on me.
So I'm going to read you all 24 paragraphs, if you will all just... Settle in, as Andy Kaufman once said, reading
Great Gatsby.
We have a long, long way to go. But one of the... Like, I won't read all of that, because it's... Really, it's just sort of... Like, it just meanders. But
like shambles is the British term for that.
Yes, exactly. But one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting was, and it kind of reads like an inside, like a behind the music piece. One of the things that the author of this piece says about the making of this record was inside the four walls of the compact truck, Public Enemy and assorted New York hip hop was essential listening. And this is the producer who says, I remember all of them sitting together playing this record, Fear of a Black Planet. Rennie, Monty, and Ian would all sing along to the whole record. They knew every single little nuance of it, like he recalls. So that was like, that's a whole paragraph of that. I was like, that has nothing to do with the output of this record, except it paint the picture that they fucked around a lot.
It shows how far afield they were going.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you had the reggae, you had the hip hop, you had, again, Squire with Led Zeppelin.
And this band formed in 1983, and they didn't get around to putting out a record until 6 years later.
Well, like, that it was that they
not
did one thing
dicking
that was
around.
Successful is kind of fascinating. Like,
yeah, different culture though, because they put out a string of singles.
Well, that's so. The thing. In England, people just put out fucking singles. Like,
may I just stand on a hill here one last time? You know, my love for this band is documented all over this hour or so of recording. But if I can recommend anything, I would tell people to go to YouTube and dig up the band's Royal Albert Hall
performance.
Yeah,
that was definitely got me with that. Like, when I go home tonight, I'm gonna go look it up and watch it.
It'll just knock you over.
Great band. You know, it, for me, I mean, ultimately, I guess I'm just disappointed. I wish this album had the songs of the Stone Roses, but the production of Second Coming.
It's not a bad point.
I was saying earlier, and I wasn't kidding when I said I listened to it six times. Part of the reason was because it sounds so goddamn good.
Well,
and
I like it more than you do.
I hate it.
I don't hate it. I think it's overly busy. They needed, for lack of a better term, an editor to help them pare some things
oversight.
Down. Yeah. I do really like the next song we're going to.
And if you're criticizing it for being overly busy, holy shit, this is the busiest song on the record.
I guess if the busyness doesn't bother me, then fine.
So no, the song we're going to go out on is Begging You, which is a straight-up dance track. Probably its closest cousin is Fool's Gold,
which is
the first record.
From the first record.
Yeah, but I mean, this is very much more big beat. Which was
Chemical Brothers.
Chemical Brothers. It has an exact
Fatboy
feel
Slim.
Of the Chemical mm-hmm. Brothers, and that what was going on dance wise in it was burgeoning in that country at that time. So, not one of my favorite songs on the record, but it's very much itself and has its obvious qualities.
Mentioning something about the drums on that.
Those are live fucking drums.
No, like, it sounds like a drum machine.
That yes, it sounds like a drum machine, but those are live fucking drums. That's Rennie.
Again,
the secret weapon of that band. Like, John Squire captures all the attention because of the solos and just the amazing melodies, but Rennie is a goddamn animal. Like, honest to God, seeing him live, you see it. On the Fool's Gold again. That's like try to break down the drum rhythm to that song. It'll turn your head inside out, and then you see him playing it live on that Royal Albert Hall video I was talking about. He's an octopus.
But one of the cool things about that, you know, bringing him up, like how he's an octopus and stuff like then that, you see like how crazy the beat is on Fool's Gold, and then you have Manny like playing that bass. Like
yes,
I mean how like. Much restraint do you have to go like brrr, and that's it, you know, instead of like brrr, you know, like playing
being all noodly.
Yeah, he wasn't noodly at all. No. It's just really interesting. Like
very understated and just kind of didn't want to steal the show. Can we agree that Ian Brown lucked into the best band? Like there's the biggest gap between talented band and untalented singer with this band maybe ever. Think of a wider gap. I mean
people say that about the Smiths a lot, but I don't agree with that much.
Yeah, and I've read somewhere like where somebody said that of course Morrissey would never have been famous without Johnny Marr. Johnny Marr would have been famous, whatever.
Well, I disagree with that.
Morrissey is like a very unique talent.
Right.
And they needed each other. And like, so I don't necessarily think Ian Brown, like, yeah. I've only really heard him on recordings.
Right.
And so he's like triple tracked or quadruple tracked or whatever the hell.
My theory, because you were crapping on the production of the first record.
That was my chief beef with
him. Yeah, but I think that was in some ways to accommodate for Ian to mute things and layer things such that they were covering up his vocal deficiencies. Whereas on this record, they just kind of let it all out there, and there are a lot of wincing moments on this record. Much as I love it, you get a lot.
But
more.
He writes the lyrics too, right?
I'm not sure. I can't
remember. Well, Squire's the main writer of all the songs.
Squire's the main writer.
Yeah. All I know is, like, last week we covered Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds, and that man cannot write a lyric to save his fucking life.
What was my favorite lyric on that album, if I can remember? It was like, she shot me to the sun like a bullet from a gun. Yeah.
Yeah, which is sort of, that's right in his wheelhouse, but... Yeah,
it's like words that kind of fit together but don't mean
slowly
dick.
Slowly walking down the hall
faster than a cannonball. And that song was a hit somehow.
Well, that guy writes Killer Hook. We talked about that.
Killer Hooks, yeah. 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 And that's why, like, when you were saying that stuff earlier, and it was like this, the line that you were saying that, like, 17-year-old Chad was just like, this is amazing. When you compare that to Noel Gallagher's lyrics, it is amazing.
It is amazing.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about fucking Voltaire at that point.
All right, boys. Well, this is cool, right? And Ryan, you picked this one?
I did pick this one. Hey. Well, actually, Nicholas Collier picked this
one.
Oh,
Nicholas, thanks for sending us a suggestion.
Fist bump Nicholas.
And probably a good time to remind anybody else, if you got something that you want to hear, by all means,
we
drop us a
very well might just review it.
Yeah, comment on the website at oneofus.net, and we would love to hear about it.
Yeah, well, that's kind of we're trying to include more listener submitted albums.
Well, this one like absolutely fell into the wheelhouse. Like I knew a little bit of it, but it was one that I definitely wanted to check into more. And so.
Right,
and you had someone off the bench who had some feelings.
We did have someone, yeah.
So I have to say this real quick before we wrap this all up. Like, Chad, it was so, like, when Ryan had texted me, he's like, you want to pick this one? And I was like, no, you can pick it. And then but last time we were here last week, he's like, this is like Chad's favorite band. He was like so excited and animated about it for a minute at the end.
Thank you.
He was so excited about you coming and doing this. So I was like, all right.
Well, I knew that he would not have a lack of things to say.
It's true. It's true.
Well, thank you for letting me blather. I damn sure appreciate it.
All right, Kevin, you've got a current affair?
I do.
What is it?
Kurt Vile's Pretty Pimpin'. Which I've not actually seen. We're gonna all experience this for the first time together.
I have no idea what any of those words mean.
Yeah, it's a new track from Kurt Vile, who I actually like a lot, who we've never covered on the show.
He was one half of the War on Drugs for a little while too, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
All right. Thank you.
just like, all I want is to just have fun, live my life like a son of a gun. I could be 1,000 miles away, but still mean what I say.
Kevin, why'd you pick that one?
Well, for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is that I didn't know it, and it's like, frankly, I get that not everybody is into Kurt Vile, but I frankly I get a kick out of like the stuff that I like of his. I tend to really like.
Here's and I didn't know it was a great song,
and I was like, this sounds like a
here's
fun ride.
Here's exactly what I think of that song.
Sight. All right.
I'm good. Not over the moon about it, but it doesn't suck.
It's a good song. Good. I mean, if you heard it on the radio, you would be like, oh, who
I'd
was
probably
that
listen
dude?
To it, you but know? Maybe listen to it a second time if I found it on the radio.
Great melody. My beef, by the way, good sounding production, too. We're talking about good production. My beef with the only beef I have with Kurt Vile is that he sort of falls in this like category of lazy stoner, I think I'm funny lyricist like Mac DeMarco.
I could see that.
Like sure.
The late lamented Jay Riotard is another one. Right. Like just, I mean, the melody on that song is great, but the lyrics are just like.
Yeah, that kind of, I don't know, it's like a minor key arpeggio or something that kind of keeps looping through. Like
that's not minor key,
but lyrically, not. You're right, Shane. Like I think, like the thing that was funny is like I. Producer Mark and I were both chuckling a little bit lyrically, and I assume that you were laughing at the same thing. Like it seemed he seemed to be retelling a dream, and like
you can't really tell. Like there's marijuana involved.
Well, sure.
And then
yeah,
there's a lot of stuff going on in this video with numbers.
Right.
So you'll see this multiplication factor start to happen. You know, it starts off, and there's you know one cat, and then there's two cats, and then. That kind of goes throughout the video.
Chad, do you have thoughts?
Yeah, Chad obviously has thoughts about
really,
this.
This is my thought was, well, that certainly is a Kurt Vile song.
True.
And as I said, I think as we were leading into this, like Kurt Vile is just an artist that I'm like, really don't have any strong thoughts one way or the other. I thought the song was. All right.
It's fine.
The video.
That's exactly what it is.
The video.
It's fine. What would you say? It's like, you're like, yeah, it's fine. And like, Ryan's like, it's I. Yeah. I mean, like.
And see, but like, unlike Mark, I couldn't even really invest in the video. Like, you know. Like,
well, and to be fair.
And I mean, so, it's not Nickelback bad, and it's not like fucking, you know, whatever your favorite band
exactly.
is. Good.
It's not This Charming Man by the Smiths. And it's not Nickelback bad. There's a lot of ground in there, though.
Like, like Kurt Vile might be in the like the absolute platonic middle of like ambivalent, like artist ambivalence.
That,
for
you
me.
Know, this is I have one. This is my one serious beef with Kurt Vile, in that I think one of the greatest, if not the greatest, songs in the history of pop music was "Back the Knife," written by Kurt Vile. But not this Kurt Vile.
Mac the Knife that came out in like the 50s?
Yeah, W-E-I-L-L.
No, it's from the 20s.
Is that,
was it
W-E-I-L-L?
W-E-I-L-L.
What's the one that we all know, the version that we all know, though?
Oh, that's Bobby Darin singing Mac the Knife. Yeah.
But it's just his take on it.
Where every verse modulates. It's just brilliant. It's a genius song. So every time I hear Kurt Vile, I'm like, oh, Mac the Knife. And not to even.
You get all excited. And you're like a dog wagging its tail. And like, no, we're not really going outside.
You think you're getting some Tin Pan Alley. just
punished for being a student of music.
It's a whole other story we'll talk about later.
My one big takeaway from this video, however, was that he considered and then passed on the cup of soup.
Yeah, no, I saw that.
Who would not?
I mean,
who
that's
doesn't want a cup of soup?
That's, of course, a giant metaphor for something.
It's lazy stoner stuff. I mean, not that stoners are lazy, but this kind of, right, like, again, this guy, Mac DeMarco, Jay Riotard.
What was
like,
the video that we watched where the giant payoff was
Parquet Courts.
Yeah, Parquet
Stoned
Courts.
I do
like that song. But.
The Stoned and Starving, for those of you that haven't heard this episode of the show, Ryan made us watch the entire video. And Mark and
because the payoff.
He was like, you got to watch the payoff. Got to watch the payoff. And the payoff is this hot chick goes to McDonald's, gets an Egg McMuffin,
and then walks and it's like 4.5 minutes long, and she sits
and
down.
And at the end of it, she eats
she
the
just eats
egg
it.
Muffin.
Yeah. And Mark and I were really like, we're both like, oh my God, there's a payoff, there's a payoff. It's going to be really interesting. And Ryan, it ends, and Ryan looks at us and he goes, she was stoned and starving.
No, she's not. At least not starving.
Well, I will say, like, where this video is concerned, Shane, you like physically checked out at about like less than a minute.
He was
like,
kind of gesticulating.
No, it's like Shane gets this thing where it's like in a minute where like it's like you're not into it. It's not like you were ambivalent. It was like you were like, okay, I know what I think about this. I've made my opinion.
Yeah. You're right.
And then you couldn't sit still. Too. Like that was kind of fascinating. It's
you're,
like
not,
you,
I
it's
mean,
weird.
Your
podcast,
felt the same
but
way.
Like,
well, I wasn't exactly. That's 4 minutes of my life I'm not getting back. It wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't that, but it's just kind of like. I'm ready.
Like
for this.
Waiting in line for the bathroom.
I'm ready for this kinda, to be over.
Yeah. Not that. Yeah. Waiting in line for the bathroom is pretty bad. And Kevin, you hit the nail on the head there. Like, yeah, I mean, I checked out. I was like, okay, I get it. Yep. Like, that song could be a minute and a half long.
Exactly.
I was just listening to, we just did a Ramones album recently. Not you.
Rocket
Kevin.
To Russia.
Rocket to Russia, but I just heard. I didn't mean that. That sounded like I was being shitty. Like, not you, Kevin.
Well, no, I wasn't there for it. Yeah,
no,
you're
but
right.
I didn't mean it to sound like that. Like,
it's
not real, you.
It was accurate. Easy, Kevin. It was an accurate observation.
All right. So anyway, I just heard this song was not on this record, but I just heard Blitzkrieg Bop yesterday on the radio. Incredible song, in and out, minute and a half. Like, I knew all I needed to know, and I felt wonderful about it. That song, for about the first minute, you know, aside from the, like, the weird, shambly, lazy lyrics and the stupid video, pretty good hook.
Aside from 98% of everything about this, yeah, it was pretty
no,
good.
No. It's a decent song.
Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, how'd you like the play?
Right. Okay, I get what you're saying. But, I mean, the hook is really good in that. I mean, like, I liked listening to the song, but I was over him in about 50 seconds.
I am pleased that we all got to experience it together. Like, I typically will listen to these ahead of time. I did not get a chance to listen to that one before we all sat down tonight, so it was fun to experience it with you guys.
If that song comes on the radio when I go home right now, I would probably turn it up. It's a decent song. Good hook, good song. You just don't have to... I just don't want to think about it too much.
So
there's no buy-in.
Next week, I will not be here, but... Are you guys doing the? You guys going to sit in on the other show?
We are going to go. Ryan and I. Kevin's going to be in San Francisco. We're going to go and watch Straight Outta Compton, the NWA biopic, and then we'll go and record with Chris Cox,
the Podfather,
Chris and Brian, the Podfathers. I don't know that Chris is going to actually be recording with us, but Brian will. So you haven't met him yet, and he's fun. So. We might have a lot to say. And so then also the next record that it's my turn next time, and I'm finally going to get around to Father John Misty's I Love You, Honey Bear.
Nice.
Yeah.
I only know the single, and I love it so much.
Which is the album that is like that we reviewed his first album, Fear Fun, and... It would have been the most boring show we'd ever done because we were like, yep, great, yep, you're, yep, amazing, yep,
real good.
Other than the fact that Josh Tillman is
hilarious,
insane,
yeah,
and hilarious. Yeah. Well, this is super fun, and I hope you come back, Chad, if you want to. Hopefully, we're not going to drive you off.
I'll give you my agent's number.
Oh, and, see.
Oh, look how tough. Look, big, like a big boy pants he's got now.
He's already
a
star.
What happened? All right, you guys.
Kind of a big deal.
This week, I'm Kevin. Always, I'm Kevin. But
yeah,
still.
See, I do that, too.
For now, I'm Shane.
For now, I'm Shane. Yeah, I do the same thing. Yeah. Okay, so...
I'm Kevin.
I'm Shane.
Ryan.
I'll always be Chad.
And I'm Pete.
This is Somebody Likes It.